Welcome to the Hatch podcast for Hive.
This is Mia Hollingsworth-Smith interviewing poet and editor Kate Garrett. Hi Kate, thank you for talking.
Hi Mia.
In brief, what has been your poetry journey and why poetry for you?
My poetry journey specifically, I'd always wanted to be a writer since I was really tiny.
Yeah.
But I wanted to write as soon as I could pick up a crayon or a pencil or something, I was about three. I started writing little books about Care Bears and things like that. Oh. And I thought I'd grow up to be a novelist or write short stories. And I always really liked music and singing as well. But then when I was about 12, I learned about poetry in school. The teacher was quite hard English teacher. She wasn't like the nicest one ever, but she did really care about reading and writing, and it was sort of like a gifted program, I say that loosely, like, that I was in for English. And she taught us The Highwayman by Alfred Noyes, and I realized that you could tell stories in poems. It wasn't just poetry, wasn't just like nonsense verse that you get taught when you're small.
Yeah.
And so that's when I really sort of fell in love with poetry and wanted to write it myself and read more and more of it. And so all through my teens I was into it, but as far as the journey goes, I had one poem published at 17, but then like life sort of got in the way because I didn't have the nicest childhood, and it sort of followed into my 20s and like late teens and 20s. Things were a bit difficult, so I didn't get anything published, but I never stopped writing.
Yeah.
And then I got published properly at 31. And the first poem of adulthood was when I was 31, and I've just not stopped since. And why poetry? Like I said, it's because I didn't realize you could tell a story in it. And I just think poetry's sort of a totally different use of language. It's somewhere between a song and like a prose storytelling. And you have to condense things a bit and say things in an unusual way. And I like the way it can make us, like, as readers or listeners, any person could feel something or think something really unexpectedly. And there's always a connection with poetry that might not necessarily be there in something else. So that's why poetry for me is just, it's very interesting form.
Yeah. I know that folklore and fantasy are interests in your reading and writing. What specifically inspires you about them?
I think it's the possibility that they provide, because there's so much symbolism, and again, it's the storytelling aspect as well. But because folklore and a lot of the elements that get used in sort of fantasy fiction, but I grew up in the 80s, so like we... like as a small child, and I was exposed to lots and lots of fantasy films.
Yeah.
Like The Neverending Story and Legend and Labyrinth and The Last Unicorn, which is my absolute favourite. And there's so much sort of elements of folklore and mythology that are put into those things that I just grew up with, finding an interest in actual folklore and mythology through fantasy fiction. And there's possibility there that's not there in, like, realism. Mm. And I think you can write about very real... I think that goes into your next question, because I remember answering this separately.
it's fine.
The possibility is, like, the symbolism and the possibility are what I love about it most, I think. It's not limited by anything, because if, like... people believe in folklore or superstition or something, they believe in magic, and it's less limited. There's more to work with, and there's more to consider. And it just because it's magic doesn't mean it's not applicable to everyday life, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So how have they influenced your work?
So I usually condense that by saying I like to make tangible things more otherworldly, and I like to make otherworldly things more real. So if I'm writing about something that's actually happened to me, I will still use sort of mythical and magical and folkloric elements to talk about that. Or if I am writing about folklore, I will try to make it seem believable. So it's just that's my personal use of that sort of genre in my own work. Because I think, again, with the symbolism and everything, you can just make everyday things one, more interesting, and two, more accessible, because folklore connects a lot of people. A lot of people know about folk beliefs. It depends on, some are more obscure, but again, that's more interesting. If it's something everybody knows about, like a fairy tale, it makes something that might have only happened to you quite accessible to a lot of other people.
Yeah. So I can see that you're really inspired by like folklore and myths. So do you have any favourite ones?
Too many favourite ones, probably. I really go back to the myth of Taliesin a lot. One of my journals that I run, Three Drops from a Cauldron, is actually named after that myth. It's a Welsh story, and Ceridwen is sort of a witch or a sorceress, and she has two children. One is her beautiful daughter, and one is her far less beautiful son. And she wants to make a potion to give him wisdom. So, and inspiration. It's like this potion that she brews in her cauldron is to give sort of limitless inspiration, poetic inspiration, creativity, wisdom. And she hires a boy to stir it called Glambach, and accidentally gets three drops of this potion on his thumb, and it burns him, so he puts it in his mouth, and suddenly he has all the insight and inspiration, and he can shapeshift, and he's got magical powers. So there's a chase, and I'm not going to go through every single animal we turn into, but like, he turns into a series of animals. Ceridwen turns into a series of animals, because the reason she's so cross is that the three drops was all it took to give all the power. The rest was wasted. So she chases him down, and in the end, he turns into a seed, and or like a grain, and she turns into a hen, and she eats him, and then gives birth to a baby 9 months later, which was him as this seed, and it's Taliesin, like the first Welsh bard, who sort of the creator of all the Welsh poetry, and that's how he was meant to have come into existence, was through this accident with the cauldron of inspiration. That's probably my favorite.
Yeah,
because it's like there's a few things in different mythologies that are to do with like poetry and creativity coming from, like in Norse mythology, there's like the need of poetry and things like that, but I just really like the Welsh one because there really was a Taliesin, and I like that he has like an actual myth about him. But yeah, so that's probably my favourite, but there are so many other favourites in Greek myths and so on, but a lot of them are quite dark, so I'll stick to that one instead.
Okay. How would you describe your writing process?
Okay, that is, my writing process is mostly rewriting. If you mean how I get from nothing to a poem, that sort of thing, I start out with lots and lots of scribbles, and usually they're awful and don't make any sense, and I like have to cut away at things and find the good bits, and I take the good bits out and I type them up and start putting other bits in until it's a poem. It's not the most organized writing process. I'm not someone who can write line by line, and even going sentence by sentence is quite difficult until I get to a certain point, because I have to get all the ideas out first and try to work out what I'm trying to say. So I would say like most 90% of my writing is rewriting, because it's lots of changes along the way that are very hard to keep track of. It's although I can see, if I look in a notebook and I look back on how I've written something, it's a sort of flows like a river rather than any kind of process. A lot of it is based in history or myth and folklore and stuff, and I do a lot of reading of like non-fiction on the internet or in books, and I take a lot of notes, and then I'll go, oh, this would make a good poem, and
okay. I've just realised I've missed a question.
Okay.
Do you believe in any of the myths or folklore that you come across?
Sort of. I mean, I would say I believe that magic on some level is real, but also the main thing that I think is absolutely based in fact is like sea monsters and like the Kraken, because there's pretty much accepted that like a Kraken is just a colossal squid, but sort of like either they've exaggerated the size of the ones that they saw, or there were massive ones that we have not seen since these sort of legends started circulating. So I definitely believe, because the oceans and seas are so vast and there's so much in them that we can't see it, or if we've seen examples of it that have like washed ashore or something, we can't understand what's really, really deep down. So I think, yeah, sea monsters 100% are real animals. They're not monsters as such, but they exist. And I think that's more just like, I wouldn't say it's like, I mean, it is a scientific debunking, but it's not because they exist. Like, they're not monsters, but they're animals. But I think they're still scary and they're real. So definitely like, yeah, a Kraken is a thing. So yeah, that's definitely something I believe in. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Superstitions and stuff. I touch wood all the time. It drives my husband crazy if I'm like, oh, I want to jinx it, touch wood. I literally touch the wood, like the table. So, wait.
Okay. What are the biggest difficulties for you in writing, and how do you deal with them?
I think the most practical difficulty is finding time, because I have 5 children and things. But then I just have to sort of write where I can find the time to. Writing craft-wise, I struggle sometimes with titles and endings, because they're both really, really important to me for a poem. So if I don't have an instant sort of flash of inspiration for either of those things, and it's bothering me, and I haven't got it right, I sort of just have to walk away from the poem for a while and let the part of my brain that's intuitive and creative or whatever figure it out on its own and come back to it. I'll get an idea much later. So yeah, titles and endings. They not everyone is so fussed about titles, but I really care about titles. Like, I don't know how much of my poems you've read, but some of my titles are weird because I just think of them and I really like. In other people's poetry, in novels, I just like titles that are strange. And in like songs and albums and stuff, I don't know. So it's important for me to not have rubbish ones.
Yeah.
Almost as important as an ending, which should be important to everyone, a poem's ending. But yeah, so those are my struggles.
And so you like earlier mentioned that you struggle to find time. And like that's something I personally struggle with. So is there like any advice you'd say to kind of like help deal with that?
Well, on one hand, I'd say like, you know, grab it wherever you're able to find writing time. But also, sometimes I get not having the time mixed up with what most people call writer's block. But I don't really believe in writer's block. I think it's just part of a cycle.
Yeah.
Of like producing lots of stress or you know, and letting your brain sort of sit with things and get ideas. So I think I've gone off on a tangent there, but it's like, because sometimes I might have time to write and feel like I can't, but it's not that I can't, it's just the right or wrong time in the cycle of the writing cycle. I sort of see it as a writing cycle. I don't know if everyone else does, but because it's important not to get stressed out if you do find writing time and then you feel like, oh, I can't write. You could write. You could just write gibberish, like notes, ideas. They might not be a poem. But I think it's important to scribble things down even if they're not a poem yet.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's always important to find, like, grab the time when you can. But if you feel like I've wasted it because I've not written a poem, but you haven't really wasted it if you're thinking about a poem. Or story, or whatever it is that you're writing. So it's not easy to find time to do it, but you don't have to, you know, real life doesn't work like that. You just, like, I know in Stephen King's book about writing, he thinks you should write like 8 hours a day, like it's a job, but if you're Stephen King, you can. And I know that he would say, well, he did have, you know, had 3 kids and 2 jobs or whatever at one point, but you still, there's no way he was writing 8 hours a day. It's just not possible when you're just a regular person. Maybe one day, but like, it's not always practical to do that. So you just write when you can.
Okay. So you're also a poetry editor as well as a writer. So what drew you to editing, and what do you enjoy and dislike most about it?
Well, I think the two things that made me, I kind of became an editor by accident, because I got involved with the Writers Collective several years ago and ended up editing anthologies. But I really liked doing that because, one, I love to read. So the idea of making a journal or a book, you know, putting it together, it's reading and it's providing something to read to other readers. And also, it's helping people, and I really like to help other writers. And I thought that's one way to do it. And because I love reading, it sort of was easy enough. And what I do enjoy about it is that, that feeling of publishing good work and putting it out there and designing the issue of the journal, even though it's only online, and sometimes I publish books, but I'm doing a lot less of that now. And so, like, that's all really fun and good for the writers, good for the readers. I don't like having to reject work, but obviously you cannot publish everyone. So I try to be as encouraging as possible, even if the work isn't right for that particular thing that they've submitted for, because chances are it'll be right for someone else. But yeah, that's the part I don't like. I don't like having to tell people no, but you have to, so.
What tips would you give to people submitting work to a magazine or journal?
Well, that's a really easy one to answer. Read the guidelines and follow them exactly.
Okay.
If anything in their guidelines is unclear, which sometimes does happen because editors are only human, ask for clarification, and always be polite. And like in the covering email, it doesn't have to be like your life story, but if you just say hello, here are my poems, thank you for your consideration, that's so much nicer for an editor to see than just nothing. Like, I don't like to know necessarily too much about a writer before, because the work is what matters most, but it's like you are sort of interacting with other human beings, and it's just, everything's done by email, it seems, it's easy to forget that. So it is nice, just it's nice to be polite, say hello and like thanks. And you know, editors try to, I think most editors try to do the same in return.
Yeah.
So those are really my tips. And you do have to be prepared for being rejected. I get rejected all the time. And famous poets get rejected all the time, as far as I've read entries with them, which always makes me feel better. They might be getting a better class of rejection, like, from like much fancier magazines, but they still do get them. So it's like, that's probably the hardest part when you're like new to it, is dealing with that. And in fact, it's hard for people who aren't new to it sometimes. I don't really let it faze me too much anymore. Well, it stopped me from submitting for a long time, and it's not worth it, because if you've submitted and been rejected, you're one step ahead of everyone who's not even sending work out.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Is there any websites or journals that you'd recommend to young poets to check out?
Well, I could recommend mine. Only one is open for submissions, but, you know, everyone's welcome to read what's there. My journals are Pickaroo Poetry.
Yeah.
3 Drops from a Cauldron, and Bonnie's Crew. Bonnie's Crew is the only one that's open for actual submissions, but I'd be really happy to have submissions from younger poets, or that one takes creative nonfiction and fiction as well. Any writers in that case.
Okay.
And other people's journals that are both like diverse and interesting reads, I would say. Dear Reader and Atrium are poetry, online poetry journal, only poetry. And Prawl is a print magazine, and Rigwelter is an online magazine. And Prawl and Rigwelter both publish fiction and poetry. And I know from knowing the editors of all these publications that they are happy to have submissions from young writers as well. So there are good reads and good places to try submitting. Again, I can't guarantee everyone would be accepted at all those places, but I know that they're like friendly towards younger writers.
Okay.
But there are thousands and thousands of magazines, so there are so many of them are good. And so some are in America or Canada, like I would recommend, but I stuck to the UK and I just tried to narrow it down.
Okay. Who are your favourite poets that you'd recommend young poets to check out?
This is a really tough question, because I read a lot, and also I know a lot of poets personally, so it's difficult, and to recommend to young writers is another sort of criteria that I wouldn't normally consider. But I will say, okay, thinking along the lines of who I would have wanted to read when I was sort of 16, it would have been impossible because this writer is actually younger than me, but Anna Percy is a writer based in Manchester, and she has a book called Livid Among Ghostings, and when I read it I was like, why wasn't she writing poems when I was like 16? But it, you know, she's about 9 years younger than me or something.
Yeah.
She wasn't writing any poetry yet. But like I love that book and I just love Anna. And so I definitely recommend her. I would recommend more famous ones, the Helens, Helen Ivory and Helen Moore. Well, yeah. I'm sure lots of young writers are already familiar with at least Helen Moore, especially in Sheffield. But Helen Ivory writes really interesting, imaginative poetry, and she's quite like well known, but she was nice enough to like write a blurb for one of my books, which was really awesome because I know her sort of now on the internet, but I was like a big fan of her before I knew her, and she sent me a Facebook friend request and I had a starstruck moment. She's a really nice person. But yeah, I'd recommend her. She's got books Waiting for Bluebeard, got two new ones, The Anatomical Venus and I cannot remember the name of the other. It's a pamphlet rather than a collection. But yeah, Helen Ivory, Anna Percy, Helen Moore, Says Thomason, who does more performance but also is in print. They write a lot of stuff about identity, and sort of activism type things. And they're super talented.
Okay.
I don't want to babble too much. I know there's so many good poets out there. I would say just take a chance on anyone that catches your eye. And check out the journals and the online stuff, because it's much, like, you'll just come across people that are interesting that way.
Okay, thank you. What are your favourite books, poetry or otherwise?
Okay, well, I already mentioned poetry-wise, one of my favourites that I would always recommend would be Waiting for Bluebeard by Helen Ivory, and Living Among the Ghost Scenes by Anna Percy. So I've already talked about poetry.
Yeah.
Non-poetry, Breakfast at Tiffany's by Truman Capote. It's obviously quite old now, but I've read that book so many times, and it's better than the film. It's a little bit more sad and sort of bleak, but it's really good. And I love anything by Daphne du Maurier and Shirley Jackson. Shirley Jackson, probably The Lottery and Other Stories, one of my favorite books. She was an American writer. I class her as a horror writer. She did write The Haunting of Hill House, which that novel got made into like the Netflix show.
Yeah.
But yeah, her horror is very subtle, and it's always very, like, sort of everyday people, but the weird stuff under the surface. So I love Shirley Jackson.
Yeah.
Short stories. Yeah. And I have too many favorite books, so I don't want to go on and on and on. So I'll leave that there.
What advice would you give to young people aspiring to become poets or writers?
Well, I would say just to keep writing and keep going, because life can be really unpredictable. Sometimes there's lots of factors that like some people want to give up because they get rejected, or you know, their work's rejected, or some people want to give up because life gets in the way. Like, we've already talked about not having time, stuff like that. And like in my case, sort of like I was always writing, but I didn't have time to, like, I didn't have time or energy or a situation available to me where I could do it as like getting published. But it's like sometimes it'll be the only thing that's constant. If you like, I know so many writers must feel the same way I do, because you know, you care enough to be doing it in the first place, and it's like always going to be important to you, even if you lose sight of it. Like, young writers are going to be adult writers one day.
Yeah.
And just don't give up. I know it's a cliche to say that, but just keep at it, learn more about it. Always read as well. Like, don't ever say you don't read. You should read. Because I think the word, like, the most alarm bells go off for me when there's writers who are like, I don't really read. And if you're a poet, listening to other poets counts. Like, you know, you don't have to necessarily read books to consume poetry, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But you should be, I don't know. And I suppose if someone was writing films or plays, they need to consume films and plays. Like, just, it's important to, like, know the form you're writing in. And I, like, reading is probably pretty important, but again, there's other ways of reading. I say reading in quotes, so like viewing, listening, whatever.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I don't want to exclude people, but like, I just don't understand when people want to write and they're like, well, I don't really do this. I don't know of any other sort of, I don't know, especially poetry.
Yeah.
People are like, they are saying they're poets, but they don't like to read or listen to other people's poetry. It's a bit strange. You don't get musicians who are like, I love music, but only mine.
Yeah.
I don't know. So it's like, it's important to do that, be exposed to all sorts of like types of writing and everything, and just not to give up. It's so important not to give up.
Yeah.
It's not something that's simple. You don't like go to a job interview and then suddenly you're a writer. You know, it's a lot more complicated than that at times. So keep doing it.
Okay. you've just published a new collective, Saint of Milk and Flames. Can you tell us a bit about it and where we can get it?
Okay. Yeah. So it's named after Bridget, or Saint Bridget, who is she was a Celtic, like an Irish goddess and a Catholic saint. The same sort of figure is both of those things.
Yeah.
And so it's named after her, the Saint of Milk and Flames, because she represents a lot of the stuff that's in the book. She's only mentioned once. But I feel like it was because of that one mention of her in one poem that set me off putting the collection together.
Yeah.
Or noticing the themes that were in it, which are very fiery, angry, passionate, or sort of about nurturing and belonging and belief. So I've got, and some of those things are all in the same poem. So I named it after her because I felt like it was sort of a goddess influence that was on the whole collection. I mentioned her in one poem that's about my daughter, who was born with a heart defect.
Oh.
And so that's where, like, a lot of the poems are about things like that, like, some physical disability type stuff.
Yeah.
Some of it's family type stuff. Some of it's history, mythology. But the stuff that ties it all together is either the fire and the anger, or the nature of believing and doubting, or the belonging and not belonging type of stuff. It's all these specific themes that sort of can be found in like all of the poems, but maybe not every theme is in every poem.
I explain.
It's a collection, so it's not like there's one theme that ties it all together. It's like several themes, but they all sort of interrelate. So, but yeah, there's some history in there, and some mythology and some personal experience. And,
yeah. Oh, well, thank you very much.
I forgot to say it's published by Rhythm and Bones Press, which they're based in Pennsylvania, USA, but you can get the book from me on my website. There'll be information. It's kategarrettwrites.co.uk, or you can get it from Amazon or from the press, which is rhythmandbones.com. Yeah. So.
Okay.
Anywhere, really.
Yeah. Thank you very much for doing the interview.
Okay, great. So, yeah. Well, thank you for
Thank you. It was really interesting.
Sorry.